The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
We do a quick review and then jump right into the next step of what we can learn from the Kabbalah and from Torah in general in terms of the art of loving. So far we've developed that in the beginning all of existence was an endless light. And we really experientially, what is that endless light? It is really endless love. And endless love is the endless presence of God. And the whole story of creation is really all about the manifestation of God's presence, the manifestation of love. And we have come into this world as servants of God, which is synonymous with saying as servants of love, to bring that light of love into the world. Okay. We see from the story, however, that in the beginning all of existence was endless light. But when God wanted to create you and me in this world, what did God do? He removed himself, his light, his presence, whatever, from the center, creating a space. And we can derive from that that we too, in emulating God in the act of love, we too need to move ourselves out of the center and create space for others. And moving ourselves is not just moving our time or our particular, our particular activity right now aside for somebody else, but it's also moving our opinions aside. You know, that's sometimes extremely hard for people to do, that they have always thought this way, and now, in order to have a loving relationship with someone else, they have to create a space in their thinking for this person's thinking. Or they have to create a space in their, let's call it, idiosyncrasies for other people's idiosyncrasies. In other words, you know, like, it's really remarkable how we are not so aware of how we just assume that the way we do it and the way we think about it is just not the way everybody does it and the way everybody thinks about it. And I think that sometimes the joke of God, that God tends to give us children that are extremely different than ourselves. Not always, but sometimes it is extremely comical how, in fact, this friend came over, and this friend is quite a straight type of personality, and he came over with his daughter that was staying in Israel for the year, and she was a total hippie, you know? And seeing the two together, I wondered, how did she come out of this guy? And I mean, he's so straight, this fellow, and his daughter is coming in with petunia oil and most in bohemian clothing and, you know, in one of these braids coming out of the middle of her head. I mean, like, really totally avant-garde type of kid. And that's really part of creating space in our lives, you know, really moving ourselves out of the way, moving our activities out of the way, recognizing that that the way we do it and the way we say it and the way we think it isn't the way everybody else does it, and sometimes we need to make that space in our thinking, in our activities, in our schedule for other. But today I want to talk now, the second step is not only the art of making space, but you need to make space for other. And to make space for other, there are really a number of aspects to this. Because God, it says in the Torah, it says in the Kabbalah, God removed his light from the center and created a space for vessels. And vessels are very different than the light. A light projects, the vessels receive, the light is endless, the vessels are finite, the light is one, the vessels are multiple. And therefore the vessels really symbolize total otherness. So it's one thing to make space in your life for a person, but you need to make space in your life for someone who is genuinely other than yourself. And on a number of levels, other than your own gender. In other words, really when you think of it, the fact that marriage is between men and women really is kind of ridiculous. You need to make a space in your life for other. The interesting thing, almost the comedy of a marriage, is that a man and a woman are supposed to be married. And it's incredible how really very, very different men and women are. In fact, the Torah describes the relation between husband and wife as an ezer kenegdo, a helper who is opposite to him. And there's a very interesting story in the Torah because it says that God, the first human being, was actually not male or female, but what's described as androgynous, a being that is including both sexes. And it says that God says it's not good that this being is alone. God will make for this being a helper who is opposite to him. And then the Torah says that God asks the being, Adam, to give names to the animals. And then the Torah continues to say, and Adam did not find a helper who would be opposite to him. And he was saddened or he went to sleep. It's not quite clear what that is. So the commentaries point out that there seems to be a break in the storyline over here, because first it says that God is going to create for Adam a helper who is opposite to him. It then says that God charges Adam to give the animals names. And then it says that man did not find a helper opposite to him. What does that got to do with giving names to the animals? So the oral tradition tells us something quite bizarre. It tells us that really God fixed up Adam with all the animals in the garden. And that's what it means he gave names to the animals. In other words, the giving names to the animals is all part of this process of looking for his shidduch, looking for his ezer kenegdo, his helper who would be opposite to him, his significant other. And what happens is, I mean, kind of imagine Adam is sitting waiting for his blind date in the lobby of Hotel Paradise, and in walks a giraffe, right? Well, you can just imagine how shocked Adam is, and he says, "Well, that's a giraffe." Well, he actually said in Hebrew. But actually, the oral tradition says that Adam was introduced to all the animals, but none of the animals caught the fancy of Adam. He was not interested in any of them. He could not see himself with this animal as a life mate. And that's really kind of bizarre. Why couldn't Adam be satisfied with an animal? I mean, it's sad and it's insulting, but there are men who refer to women as chicks. And that's incredibly insulting. Why couldn't Adam be happy with a chick? Well, because the Torah actually tells us before this story that the position of the human being is to be in a ruling position in the world. And that animals, by definition, are subordinate to human beings. And what the Torah is teaching us is that true love means you're making a space in your life for someone who is genuinely your significant other. They are not subordinate to you. And that's the real meaning of ezer kenegdo. Ezer means to help, but kenegid means opposite and equal to. The ideal image of a loving relationship between husband and wife is that there is equality in the marriage. Not that equal and same. Actually, what makes this interesting is equal and absolutely different. We are opposites, and yet we are equal. And therefore, Adam could not be happy with an animal because love cannot be true love, the full potential of love. Cannot be satisfied with someone who is subordinate to you. And unfortunately, I've heard men say things like, marry a young woman that you can mold. And that is contrary to the ideal perspective that Judaism has on true love between men and women. That they are to be equal and not subordinate. Or I actually have a friend who married a Vietnamese girl. Well, what can you do? He's a Jewish boy, married a Vietnamese girl. And she doesn't even speak English. So they don't even communicate. He was essentially looking for a handmaid, a maid servant. And that is truly not the fulfillment of the manifestation of God's light of love. My sister tells me a story how when she was dating, on one particular date, the fellow says to her, tell me, do you like to cook? And she's got the sour face, she says, no. He said, oh, how about you like to clean? And I'm telling you, this is exactly what the guy says. She says, no. He says, what about laundry? She says, no. She then says, can I ask you a question? She says, sure. Is this a job interview? Because I'm not looking for a job. I mean, that's the sad thing. Unfortunately, men have this greater problem than women do, that they are looking for a subordinate rather than someone that they respect, equal to themselves. In fact, the Talmud says, Ishto kegufo. A man has to honor his wife like himself. Right? Like himself. And that is a critical concept in Judaism, that the true act of love is to move yourself out of the way, creating your space in your life for someone other, but truly other, an opposite who is equal to you. And what's very fascinating is that really when you delve into the story of Adam and Eve, you will discover that they had a very bad relationship. Paradise does not make a relationship, right? Adam and Eve had a very bad relationship, and according to Kabbalah, every marriage is a little fixing of the broken relationship between Adam and Eve. That's why under the chuppah, under the wedding canopy, we say these blessings that just talk about Adam and Eve, because really, each and every one of us is a fiber in the soul of Adam and Eve, and each fixed relationship is just a little bit more of the fixing of the lost paradise, which is really the lost love, which is really the real paradise. What happens in the Garden of Eden, which is very interesting, is when the woman has been separated from the man part of the Adam, Adam looks at her and he says, this is woman, because she has been taken from man. He calls her Isha, because she's been taken from Ish. Ish is man, Isha is woman. What's interesting in Jewish tradition is they're not different words. They're just different gender. In other words, the word Ish and the word Isha are the exact same word, just in different gender. Unlike some different, other languages, not always do you find, I mean, man and woman is not quite the same as Ish and Isha, but in other languages, you'll find that they're completely different words. You know, the word for man is a completely different word, has no connection to the word for woman. In Jewish tradition, Ish and Isha are equal, but different. You know, different genders, but equal in weight, not physical weight, equal in honor, in significance, in contribution to the world, right? And a male nor a woman is any more important than each other. Both have been brought into this world with equal potential to serve God. And but the problem is that all he does is he calls her Isha. He doesn't give her a name. We only find that Adam gives his wife her own name, right, and acknowledges that she has a name, only after the sin, which is part of the problem of their relationship. That Adam didn't quite understand what it really means to make space in your life for someone who is opposite you, equal to you, and yet different to you. And what basically happens, and Eve has the same problem, because essentially what happens is they eat of the tree of knowledge of good and bad. It says that the woman eats first, and then she hands it to her husband, and he also eats. When God challenges Adam and asks him, why did you eat from the tree, from the fruit that I forbade you to eat from? Adam says, the woman you gave me to be with, gave to me to eat. Now, generally, people read that thinking that Adam was simply shirking his responsibility, saying it's her fault. That's not quite what he said. Actually, he said, the woman you gave me to be with gave me to eat. What is he really saying? Adam is saying, listen, God, I had a halachic, a legalistic dilemma. I had two values here that were in conflict. One is, you told us not to eat from the tree, and I acknowledge that, but you also commanded me to be with my wife. Now, I have a dilemma over here, because once she ate from the tree, how could I then be with her if I don't eat from the tree? So I ate from it in order to fulfill your commandment that I should be with her. Once she ate from the tree, right, then I needed to, in order to stay with her, I also needed to eat from the tree. And that is his mistake. That is a common mistake in love. To be one, we have to be the same. And that is not the true experience of love. To be one, and yet to be different, is the miracle of love, the true presence of God that unites us. And we know that after the sin, there are these curses. And one of the curses is, he shall rule over her. The curse of male dominance. And most people don't realize that, yes, it is a curse. A curse is not something that we try to maintain. A curse is something we try to fix. And therefore, the ideal of male dominance is a curse, not only for women, but also for men. It is the curse that undermines our ability to experience the true miraculous joy in making space in our lives for someone who is other, a significant other. And when we read the Torah carefully, we will see that the matriarchs and the patriarchs did not have a relationship of dominance. If anything, one could perhaps make an argument that the women were a little more dominant in the relationship than the men, perhaps to equal things out, you know, for in the meantime. Because we see, for instance, in the relationship between Abraham and Sarah, God tells Abraham to listen to the voice of Sarah, which oral tradition explains means she has a higher level of prophecy than you do, and therefore do what she says. She's more attuned to my will. That's pretty amazing. In addition, in the story of Isaac, his wife Rivka really orchestrates the event whereby Jacob, Jacob pretends that he is Esav to get the blessings from Isaac. And who really ran the show here? Rivka. We see that Rivka was hardly a handmaiden to her husband, subordinate to his every will, but actually took tremendous initiative and boldly manipulated her husband. Why is all of the story, which we could talk about another time. We also see in the relationship with Jacob and his two wives, hardly were they yes women. We see the story where Jacob wants to leave their father's home, and he needs to convince his wives to leave. He didn't say, honeys, we're going. Rather, he had to convince them that they have to go. So what we see here is that in the art of making space, the first is to make a space for someone who is very other than yourself. Somewhat the idea of men are from Mars and women are from Venus. We are really completely different, just from a gender point of view, and not to mention personality, which we will mention in next, but just on the simple level of gender, men and women are extremely different. They have their weaknesses, and they have their strengths. And they have different ways of making decisions and different ways of relating to things, and that's what makes it so beautiful, exciting, adventurous, and mutually beneficial. I remember when I was trying to decide whether to ask my, at that time, girlfriend to marry me, Chana, I was very confused. I just didn't know how to make that decision. I thought, you know, of course I love her, but how do I know? And so what I did is I made a list of all her positive traits, and then I made a list of all what I perceive were her negative traits, and I didn't feel that it all added up so easily. So then I decided to give every trait a number, a value from 1 to 10. And then I added up, and still I felt this was not helping me make the decision, and I just painstakingly tried to come to some logical conclusion of whether yes or no. I finally decided to take the leap of faith and ask her to marry me. And there we were sitting there, and I turned to her and I popped the question, Chana, will you marry me? And she turned to me and said yes. And I was shocked. I said, wait a second. Did you know I was going to ask you tonight? She says, no, actually, you've taken me by surprise. I didn't even anticipate this at all. But yes. I said, wait a second. You can't just say yes. You have to think about this. I mean, you know, did you make lists? Did you put numbers in, like bad traits, good traits? And she looked at me like I was nuts. And she says, don't expect me to make decisions the way you do, right? And she was right. She was right. A woman has, and the Torah actually tells us that a woman has an extra level of bina, which is an extra level of understanding that men don't have. An ability to kind of see underneath what they call understanding, that which stands under what's going on here, and men don't have that kind of strength. So men are very different than women, and women are very different than men, and to create that service of God, to be a vessel for God's light in the world, we too need to create a space in our life for the opposite. I'm going to lay out the spectrum of otherness. And there's otherness simply from the sheer fact of being the opposite sex. But then there's otherness other than your own personality. Then there's otherness other than your dreams, your projections and expectations. And then there's making space in your life for otherness other than you've ever experienced in your life, so you don't project your baggage. And then there's otherness other than anybody you've ever met. And then there's otherness other than your parents, and not projecting your baggage of your parents on this person. So I'm actually going to go through, and the next time we get together, the various shades of otherness. But this is really the challenge of love. The challenge of love is to make a space in your life for someone who is completely, completely other than you. Other in gender, other in personality, other in taste, other in expectation, other than anybody else you've ever met. It's really an opening, and that's what love is. Love is opening your heart. And opening your heart to someone who is genuinely different than yourself. And that's very hard for people to do. It's not just on the opposite sex level, but we're not talking just about love between men and women, because also love between ourselves as friends, also part of loving another person, is creating that space for them being very different than us, right? That, in fact, is what's called Sinat Chinam. In Jewish tradition, we are taught that the Second Temple was destroyed because of senseless hate. What was senseless hate? In fact, the sad thing is that during that time, everyone was religious. So why did the temple get destroyed? Because people hated each other only because they were different. That's you know, kids are like that. Kids, not all kids, but kids, you know, will hate another kid just because they're a little bit different. You know, kid comes and he's got, you know, buck teeth. So the kids make fun of him and the kids treat him terrible. Why? Just because he's different. But it's a very childish, innate thing that people dislike people just because they're different. They didn't do anything to me, right? They're just different. What's really interesting about anti-Semitism is that, you know, we don't look different. I mean, I think we kind of do look different, but I don't think a non-Jew has the ability so much to look at a Jew and say, oh, they must be Jewish. I don't think so. And yet anti-Semitism is this sometimes very deep, almost instinctual hatred when we kind of look alike and we're very much part of your culture, but you're just different, you know? And that's senseless hate, when we hate people just because they're different. And Rabbi Cook explains, who was the first chief rabbi of Israel before Israel was a state, he explains that the temple will be rebuilt through senseless love. That we will love people for no reason, just because they are, and we will include their differences. And that's true love, you know. True love is that I can make space in my life for your difference. You know, we don't have to agree. I'm not saying that we agree with people and because they're different, well, that's not true love. True love doesn't mean we agree. True love is we agree to disagree, right? We agree to disagree, and that's what I mentioned. What's so interesting about the Jewish people, all the more so, is we tend to be extremely opinionated. And yet the fact that we are still one nation, and yet, you know, the ability to include people so different, that is again part of the manifestation of this mysterious oneness of God, the presence of God, so to speak, non-duality, that we can make space in our life for someone that's not only opposite us just physically, right, opposites us in terms of gender-wise, but even people who are different than us in religion and philosophy, and we need to make a space in our lives for that also, right? So our homework for this week is to continue to really be open to the difference between ourselves and the opposite sex, right? Really understanding how, well, for you, how men are different, and respecting and making space for the difference, and I, of course, being able to appreciate how different women are and respecting and creating that space in my life for that. I mean, I know sometimes in a decision where my wife will say, you know, we get into the discussion and I think we shouldn't, she thinks we should, and she says, listen, you just got to trust me on this. And like, I don't follow her logic because she doesn't think the same way I do. And sometimes the act of love is you make a space and you say, okay, you know, I trust you. The Kabbalah teaches us that the vessels broke. And the reason why the vessels broke is because they weren't able to really accept love in their lives. And the way they have to fix themselves, because we're the vessels, is we have to mirror that light. We have to operate with the same in the same nature as that light. And therefore, you're right. Part of the tikkun of those broken vessels is they did not know how to love. They did not know how to accept love. And therefore, there is a breakdown. Now, we, as part of the fixing of that brokenness, the first step in fixing ourselves and letting that light of God's love into our lives is just as God made space for us who are other and made space for us as his significant other, we too need to make space in our lives for others, and not just simply others on a subordinate level, but others on an equal level to ourselves. And you're absolutely right. This is part of the tikkun. Can we move ourselves out of the center? Can we make space in our thinking for other people's thinking? Can we make space in our habits for other people's habits? Can we make space for our philosophies for other people's philosophies? And again, we might disagree, but we could agree to disagree, right? But when it gets to a place of, I hate you because you're different, I can't talk to you because you're different, right? I can't stand you being in the same room as me because you're different. Then we only continue the Shvirat the Kelim. We only break the vessels because the light of God is always coming into our lives. The only question is, are we in a space, right, a mindset to accept that light? And if not, it causes us to break down even more. That's what's so interesting about this breakdown of the Kabbalah. Something positive is coming into our lives, and yet we break down because we're not ready for that positive. And that's a basic idea in Judaism, that really death is an incredible upsurgence of life coming into you that you can't take. Your circuit blew, not because there was no voltage, it's because you weren't ready to accept this life energy, and you break down. So because life energy is coming into us, a person, God forbid, who is sick, or a person who is dying, they have to realize it's not that life is being taken away from them, but life is being injected into them, and they're not able to handle it. And that's what's causing the breakdown. I would add to that that when you see a person, in your presence that's annoying, then you ask Hashem to bless you with the opportunity to see that person from God's perspective. And surely God doesn't look at them that way. And that's actually a blessing that we say every day in the Shemona Esrei, in the Amidah. We say, Chaneinu mi'itcha de'a bina v'skel. Bless us, God. Grace us from yours. Right? Grace us with your wisdom, with your understanding. Right? Because if I try to figure the world out with my understanding, it's so skewed, it's so narrow. So bless me with your understanding. If we look at the world with a little bit more of God's understanding, we'll be a lot more understanding to the world.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990, or in Jerusalem at country code 972-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.